Okay, guys, I am back. The system was bugging. I had pushed all the buttons correctly. It was just I had to restart the software. Do you guys hear me loud and clear right now? UFC 249 pre-fight analysis. Give me a thumbs up if you hear me loud and clear. This time, honestly, it wasn't a button issue. It was a software issue. I had to just reboot it, and now it is working. Thank you, Emmanuel, for letting me know the sound is up. Today, we're going to be talking about UFC 249, me and you all together. We're going to break this fight down, but as usual, I'm going to give you guys my pre-fight analysis first, and then I'm going to open it up to comments and questions so we can interact a little bit. First, I want to make sure that we stay on this topic, guys. I know there's a lot of COVID-19 craziness. I've been getting a lot of messages from people trying to ask me questions about COVID, and let's talk about COVID, and we will talk about COVID. I know it's a hot topic. We got to talk about COVID, but before that, let's do the Justin Gaethje-Tony Ferguson fight. Let's get that done. And once that is done, and after that, let's talk about COVID-19 and training during COVID-19 and how we can keep fit during this crisis, etc., and all the issues that come with this isolation period. Quick notice, I haven't done any podcasts because I have my kids at home, and they are at home now. And if there are any interruptions, please forgive them if you hear any kids screaming or running around or throwing stuff. They shouldn't be. They're upstairs. They've been warned. I tried to keep them busy and all that. My daughter, she's a bit unpredictable. So if she barges in or anything like that crazy happens, don't be surprised. I'm giving you guys a fair warning. With that said, let's discuss this fight happening this Saturday, May 9th. Tony Ferguson takes on Justin Gaethje in an interim title bout. Now, I'm really looking forward to this fight. I'm going to give you guys my pick right away, right off the bat. I'm picking Tony Ferguson. I think he has a majority chance to win. I think it's a 60-40 chance that Tony Ferguson wins. Why? Why am I picking Tony Ferguson? Well, number one, he's on an incredible win streak. I think it's 14 fights now, 13, 14 fights in UFC. He's got incredible offense. He's got incredible wrestling. He's got incredible jiu-jitsu. Gaethje is mainly going to be looking to strike. Gaethje doesn't use his takedowns except in reverse. He only defends takedowns. He never really shoots, okay? Very rarely does he score a takedown. In my opinion, he's not going to be looking to take Tony Ferguson down. He's going to be looking to stand up with Tony Ferguson. Now standing, he's got an incredible right hand. Justin Gaethje has knocked out several opponents in the UFC with that powerful cannon of a right hand. He's a very powerful puncher. We've seen it many times. He's knocked out and hurt many elite UFC fighters. Now, that is fundamentally his best weapon, and that's what he's going to stick with. He's going to be mainly a boxer. I see it as Tony Ferguson's going to bring more tools and more dimensions. Tony Ferguson's elbows have an incredible reach. Now, for those of you who've never fought with elbows, elbows are great. Okay, they're very it's a very powerful tool. When you hit somebody with an elbow, they feel it. Okay, it's bone. It's the second toughest bone in your body, or third toughest bone in your body is the elbow. I think first is like your skull and heel, and then after that it's the elbow. Okay. When you hit with somebody with an elbow, it really hurts. The problem with elbows is they have a short range. The range of the elbow is it's hard to reach somebody with your elbow. When you want to hit them with the elbow, you got to get really close. And as you're getting that close, obviously they're going to be on high alert, so they're harder to hit. Now, Tony Ferguson's reach from his elbows is incredible. Very similar to John Jones, comparatively. Okay, different weight classes, but comparatively to the rest of the division, they both have a very long reach with their elbows. And I think that's going to nullify and counter a lot of Gaethje's boxing. So what else is Gaethje going to bring to the table? Well, he does have a very powerful low kick, and we've seen that Ferguson has been susceptible to low kicks. So he's going to punch, Gaethje's going to punch, Ferguson's going to punch back, but he's going to throw a lot. I still feel that Ferguson's going to switch stance. He's going to do his salsa footwork that he normally does to nullify the kicks. He's going to land the punches. He's going to land his barrage. I don't want to make it sound like he only has elbows. He has a barrage of, he has a great arsenal of techniques. Okay, he's going to throw kicks, spinning kicks, punches, Superman punches, and he's going to shoot. He's going to dive roll. He's going to do the Imanari. He's going to do all sorts of crazy stuff. And if the fight goes to the ground, a huge advantage. I'm giving a huge advantage to Tony Ferguson. If he's on his back, he's going to have his rubber guard. If he's on top, he's going to have his darce attacks that he's so good at. He's going to have a lot of submission opportunity. I think most of this fight is going to be standing up until somebody gets knocked down and maybe taken down by Tony Ferguson's side. I don't think Justin Gaethje is going to do any takedowns. Personally, I don't think he does any takedowns. So I'm giving a lot of pluses here to Tony Ferguson. I think the striking is going to be in Tony Ferguson's favor. I think the wrestling, because the only offensive wrestler is going to be Tony. And I think on the ground, I also think that Tony is going to have an advantage on the ground. So I'm giving him all the dimensions here. What about conditioning? This is a 5-round fight. I'm also giving the edge to Tony on the conditioning. I think Gaethje is going to last all 5 rounds. I think he can last all 5 rounds, I should say. He's got the experience in 5 rounds. He's got the cardio. He's fit. He's been training his entire life. I don't think conditioning is going to be an issue. Conditioning is only going to be an issue if somebody gets hit really hard to the body or gets hit right on the button. Then conditioning will become an issue. But if it's a 50-50 fight all the way to 5 rounds, nobody's gassing out. Okay, nobody's fading away. They're going to have to hurt each other to fade the other away. Okay, so I'm giving it 60-40. Tony Ferguson, he's on a win streak. He's on fire. He's got that momentum behind him. He's been waiting for this title shot for years. He's been on a win streak for, I forget how many years. Maybe it's been like, he lost to Michael Johnson years ago where he broke his arm. I believe it was round one. He got a kick to the arm. He broke his arm. That was like 2015. 2015, 2016. He hasn't lost in 5-6 years, okay? Maybe 4 years. No. It's got to be 5 years, about 5 years. He has more arsenal standing up. He's the only one who's going to shoot offensively. And on the ground, it's all his. Whether he's on the top or bottom, I think he's going to be more effective. Guys, am I crazy? Before you guys tell me your comments and questions, tell me who you think is going to win. Put down Tony Ferguson or Justin Gaethje. Put their initials here. If you think Tony Ferguson is going to win, put TF. If you think Justin's going to win, put a J or a JG. Okay, go ahead. Let me see what you guys think. Who are you guys picking for his for this fight, for this main event? Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje, Tony. I would say it's about 90% Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje. Guys, I think we see it likewise. Now, can Justin Gaethje win? Of course he can win. I'm giving it 60-40. That right hand can flat it. Let me make a case for Justin Gaethje, okay? Because I also really like, I'm a big fan of both fighters, and I'm a big fan of Trevor Whitman, and he trained Justin Gaethje, and he's one of the best coaches to ever have done it. Okay, so I really believe this duo is a great duo. One of the greatest fighters and one of the greatest coaches working together. Of course they can win. Of course they can win. Tony has been hit. Listen, he's not the type of guy who goes in and comes out without a scratch. No, the opposite. Completely the opposite. He comes out bloody. He comes out bruised. He's a very durable fighter, very intelligent fighter, but he gets hit. Now, Justin Gaethje is good at hitting. Now, he's got a cannon for a right hand. We've seen him stop Donald Cerrone. We've seen him stop Barboza. We've seen him stop Vic. We've seen him stop. Who else has he stopped with a right hand? Oh, he had a credible war with Eddie Alvarez. Had Eddie Alvarez really on the rope, so to speak, and Eddie Alvarez came back to win. And same thing with his fight with Dustin Poirier. I mean, he has incredible powers, what I'm trying to say. He can absolutely knock out Tony Ferguson. It is a possibility. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think a lot of you are trying to say the same thing. You know, the guy's great, but I just think that Tony Ferguson, now is his time. I think Justin Gaethje may become world champion in the future, but right now, the momentum is with Tony Ferguson. I'm picking Tony. I think the vast majority of you all are picking Tony. And yes, it was brought to my attention by XX Simino. He says, Gaethje stopped Michael Johnson. And Michael Johnson beat, I assume it's you bring that up because Michael Johnson beat Tony Ferguson. Yes, but that was a long time ago. Okay, that's kind of like what I like to call MMA math. Justin Gaethje beat Michael Johnson. Michael Johnson beat Tony Ferguson. Therefore, Gaethje should also beat Tony Ferguson. It doesn't work like that. Okay, and there's countless examples. When Ferguson lost to Michael Johnson, that was many, many years ago. If they fought today, I don't know if it would be the same. I don't think it would be the same outcome. Okay, so Ferguson has grown since then. He's evolved. He's developed. So, can Gaethje win? Absolutely. Will he? I think we all agree. That's why I'm keeping it short, guys. I think Ferguson just really has every realm. Now, what about clinching on the fence? I think I still give it to Ferguson. I think his clinching is going to be, it's just going to be better. He has been, here's the knock on Tony, okay? He has been hit before. He has been dropped before. But true to his name, he bounces back up like the boogeyman, El Cocuy. He bounces back up to his feet like a mummy, you know, like a zombie, I should say. He just bounces back up to his feet, and it's like he just got hit. He just got dropped. He bounces right back up to his feet. Will Gaethje's right hand be enough to keep him down? I don't know. I think it's a 60-40. It's a tough fight, but I think Ferguson gets the win. Okay, guys, give me your comments and questions on this fight. How do you see it? What do you see again? What do you see happening in this fight? Let me know. All right, here we go. Gaethje is way less hittable with his new style. That's from Danny Noor. Danny, I don't know about that. You know what? Listen, his last fight was with Cowboy. It ended quite quickly. You know, Cowboy's been on a bit of a slide. He's also fighting Anthony Pettis, which I'm really excited to see. A rematch between Donald Cerrone and Anthony Pettis on the same night. So be sure to watch that. Gaethje's new style, I hope he's made improvements. But to me, when I watch his history of fighting, Gaethje's a very intelligent guy, but he's also a blood and guts fighter. He is also a blood and guts fighter, let's be honest. Now, Trevor Whitman, his trainer, I've worked with him in the past. He's a brilliant trainer, tactician extraordinaire. Trevor Whitman is a tactician extraordinaire. And he's trained Justin Gaethje by the book. The fundamentals, how to protect yourself, how to be intelligent, footwork, slipping and sliding, bobbing and weaving. The whole thing he's been taught. Justin Gaethje's fighting style, I think, has a lot to do with his personality, not his training. I think it has a lot to do with how he expresses, how he understood those techniques that were taught. And it has a lot to do with personality. Now, in my opinion, in this fight, his personality is going to come out more than usual. So it's going to be more blood and guts, not less blood and guts. Now, you're trying to say that, look, he's changed his style. He's more slick now. Maybe. But I believe that El Cocuy is going to bring out his Justin Gaethje's personality. He's going to bring out that dog fight out of Justin Gaethje. And it's going to turn into a dog fight. Whereas El Cocuy has a strange way of pulling people into a dog fight by doing these weird things and hitting you and then kind of disappearing. And people kind of get angry. I see his opponents get angry. They want to hit him back. They want to take away these unorthodox techniques that he does because he's always bringing to the table these new and strange maneuvers. And a lot of time fighters, they don't like that. Hey, I just got hit by this thing that doesn't make any sense. Let me hit this guy back. That was just luck, you know? And I think that that's going to draw out Justin Gaethje's blood and guts instinct. And I think that he has a very strong instinct to go toe-to-toe. And that's just, you know, how I see it. You know, when I watch his fights, I think he's very well trained, but his personality shines more than his technique. All right, what else we got here? Guys, let's keep it on Tony Ferguson. I know Cruz is also fighting Triple C. Maybe I do another video this week because I know I owe you guys videos. I owe all of you guys videos. Special shout out to my sponsors, TimTam.Tech, Monster Energy, JujiClub.com. Check out the new Omoplata video. Check out our latest instructional. Me and Carl Pravik, Silver Fox Pravik, put out an instructional on the Omoplata. Special thank you to TriStar Dorms. TriStar Dorms is obviously closed right now because of COVID-19. However, once the crisis is over, it will be open again. Okay. So maybe I'll do Henry Cejudo versus Dominic Cruz the day after tomorrow. Okay. But right now, let's hit that fight. Tony Ferguson, the main event, Justin Gaethje, this Saturday. I believe the fight's happening in Florida this Saturday. What's going to happen? Justin Gaethje will win via a violent, vicious knockout. Tony gets dropped in almost every time. I think you mean every fight. He takes lots of damage. Justin Gaethje will for sure touch him up. That's from Prince Malik 1. Prince, I agree with you, but did you see his last fight against Donald? I felt like Tony fought more responsibly. You're right. Tony Ferguson is also a blood and guts fighter. He's also a wild man in there. It's also his personality. But I was really impressed in his last fight with Don Cerrone, how much slicker he was, how much more intelligent he was. And also rewind all the way back to the Rafael Dos Anjos fight. He was also slicker than usual, more careful than usual. In those two fights, he didn't get dropped. So yes, I agree with you. He's been dropped many times in his fights. And I feel like he tells you how he's going to fight before he starts the fight. If you look at Tony Ferguson before the fight, like sometimes he's like, you could tell he's agitated. And then sometimes he's kind of crouched down on one knee and kind of like a cold stare. And that's when I find he fights best, when he has like that cold stare and he's not all agitated. Again, I'd have to go back and look at the fights. And maybe that's something that's irrelevant. It's just correlation, not cause and effect, obviously. But I feel that he's been waiting so long for this title fight. He's going to go in there calm, cool, and collected. He's not going to let the boogeyman out right away. If you look at his last fight with Donald Cerrone, I thought he fought a brilliant round one. Round one, for those of you who don't remember, it was really, really close. It was really neck and neck. I gave it to Tony, but not by much. And it was, I'm telling you, I thought it was very close. His coaches were saying, go harder. You're respecting this guy too much. They were egging him on. And you could tell that he was thinking, no, I'm just setting him up. Like, I felt that Tony was right. His coaches were wrong, which is rarely the case, okay? Usually the coaches are watching from the outside. Their minds are cooler and they're more experienced than the fighter. And usually the coach will be right and the fighter will be wrong. This time I felt that Al Kokui was correct. He was finding what works. Round one didn't matter that much to Al Kokui. Whether he won it or not, it wasn't going to affect the outcome. This was not going to be a five-rounder. And if it was, he's going to win all the other rounds. Why? Because in my opinion, Tony was figuring out how he's going to land his elbows. How hard does Cowboy hit? Is Cowboy going to shoot, which he did? What am I going to do? I have to stuff the takedown a few more times, take that away from him. Like, you could see that he was setting Cowboy up. He was fighting more responsibly. He wasn't overly respecting Cowboy. Cowboy is to be respected because he's a dangerous guy, but they were both kind of feeling each other out. Now, if you look at Cowboy's fight with Justin Gaethje, he ran after Justin. He didn't feel Justin out in round one. He just went after him. At one point, he kind of blitzed. He literally ran up two steps forward with a one and a two, and he got countered with a cross. Cowboy against Gaethje made a fatal mistake. He didn't approach the fight the way he did with Ferguson. Now, in my opinion, if he did, it would have went in later rounds. It could have gone in later rounds when he fought Justin Gaethje. So, in my opinion, if Tony Ferguson fights very responsibly, intelligently, and lets the boogeyman out at the right time, it'll be a win and entertaining. And that's what I think is going to happen. Okay, guys, I do have a little bit of lagging here. I'm not sure why, but I think the internet is slower than normal because much more people are online now because of COVID-19. What else we got here? Let's see. Ultimately, the fight is going to come down to whoever wins the fight. That's from Marijuana Guy. Marijuana Guy, I'm not surprised by your handle. Yes, obviously, the fight is going to come down to the guy who wins the fight. But of course, you're Marijuana Guy, so I'm going to let that one slide. Can Tony's recent wake up play a negative factor? Excuse me. That's from 49. You know, he's been cutting weight. He's a wrestler. He's been cutting weight since he's a kid. I know he cut weight. He made a point of it for cutting weight it was like 3 weeks ago. I don't think it was the wisest choice, but I don't think it'll affect him that much, no. You know, he's been cutting weight for a long, long time, and he's in phenomenal shape. If he was not in phenomenal shape, I would second guess him. Gaethje too common, predictable? That's from Perro Perique. I don't want to say he's predictable. Look, he's mastered, you know, that's the dynamic of fighting, you know. Do you want to master the basics better than anybody, or do you want to trick everybody? Do you want to have, you know, you do the basics, but you also have this weird unpredictability to you? I've seen world champions with both styles. I've seen world champions that never do anything that is not orthodox. And I've seen world champions who are anything but orthodox. Okay, so it's not a question of style. I think, but level is even more important. And I think that Tony Ferguson is just at the highest level right now. Okay, guys, I think we've pretty much exhausted this fight. I know it's an exciting fight, but there's not much to it. I'll take one more on the fight, and then we can talk about COVID-19. How much did we? We did 20 minutes. We covered this fight in 20 minutes. And why? Why did we cover this fight in 20 minutes? Because we all agree. It's rare that we all agree. Usually, the fights I cover are like 50-50 fights. You know, the toughest, like, hard, like, just tough to call fights. This is a tough to call fights, but it's not that tough. You know, I just feel that the advantages are going to be on Ferguson's side. But who knows? Maybe Justin Gaethje surprises us all and lands a KO blow. All right. I got a red line here from YouTube. Video output low. I don't know what that means. I guess you guys are just getting like a lower quality. All right, guys. Let's see here. Is there anything else on this file? Okay, we got some. Let me just do the super chats here. Does no fan affect their performance or benefit them? I don't think it makes a difference. There's going to be an empty arena. I don't think it's going to make any difference at all. I think I missed a couple of super chats. Let me see here. CSO, coach, let's get this money. That's from Fabian. Fabian, I'm not sure what you mean. The $2 you sent me? Well, yes, thank you for sending the money. Fabian Angian. Okay, here we go. Sorry, you sent me two. Fabian, you sent me two messages. All right. Tony has an insane work capacity. Is this genetic? Fabian, you're asking me, look, is Tony Ferguson's cardio genetic? I believe the answer is yes, but not only genetic. So you have people who are predisposed to being strong, and you have people who are predisposed to have incredible cardio. In my opinion, Tony Ferguson, he's been training his entire life, and he's predisposed to having good cardio. And he also trains in Big Bear, so cardio is not an issue for him. He has all these in his favor. So I would say it's a question of yes, he was born with the potential, but he also exploited that potential, which is a huge part of the pie. Piece of the puzzle, I should say. All right, guys, that's it for this fight. Let's just maybe turn it over now to COVID-19. Guys, for those of you doing Ramadan this month, I want to wish you a Ramadan Kareem to all. I am also fasting, so please forgive me if I go. I'm a little bit slow to answer your questions. You know, I'm a little bit. I have a little bit of brain fog. It's a bit tough here. It's a hot. Well, it's not too hot today, actually, in Canada, but the days are long. It's our summer days, so it's a Ramadan. It's a summer Ramadan, or spring, late spring Ramadan, I should say, and the days are long. Okay, so Ramadan Kareem to you all. Let's talk about COVID-19. I got so many messages asking me about COVID-19. Guys, don't forget, I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV either. But let's talk about training during a lockdown and everything related to that, that I'm opening to answer. So shoot your questions. Let's talk about COVID-19 and all that craziness. All right, here we go. Coach, where did you get the shirt? Love it. Pizzolo, this is one of my favorite shirts in the world. Okay, neon belly, my friends, neon belly. If you don't know what that means, I feel sorry for you. If you do know what that means, buy it. You can buy it on my YouTube channel, or you can go to jujiclub.com and buy it. Okay, that's where I got it from, jujiclub.com and or YouTube. It should be the t-shirt scrolling on the bottom of your screen, and you can just pick one up. Neon belly, baby. Ramadan Kareem to you too, Armin. Thank you. Jazakallah, my friend. I got another super chat here. Hopefully it is on the topic. Coach, how do you use BJJ in the bedroom? Should I throw up a triangle? That's from Jung. Jung, I wouldn't. No, not a triangle. No, my friend. All right, guys. COVID-19 questions. Let's see what you guys have been doing. Have you guys been gaining weight? Have you been true to your diet? Because I know the first 2 weeks of the lockdown, I was just eating everything in sight. I wasn't training. I had nowhere to train, nothing to do. Of course, I was training at home, but it's not the same. Not the same at all. Not the same motivation. Not the same workout. Not the same intensity. Not the same effect. And I was just bored. And me and my wife were just cooking these delicious meals and eating more than I should. I was eating definitely more than I should and feeling guilty about it. But now, the last 4 weeks, I've been very on my diet, back to usual, and feeling good and training more and getting in good shape. Peloton, a good idea during COVID-19. That's from TD. Peloton, I believe, is the bicycle, the bike, the home workout. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Biking is great. It's a good way to stay active. It's low impact. It's good on the knees. However, for me, I don't find it very motivating. Okay, I do use the Airdyne, kind of similar, but I only do intervals. I don't stay on it for long. Because for me, cardio machines and stuff like that, I can only do a very small amount of it. I like to do high intensity, short durations, because to me, it's too boring. If I'm going to do a long cardio workout, I'm going to put on a podcast and I'm going to go for a run. Sometimes I'll do a 5K run, and sometimes I do a 1 mile run. Like, I run 1 mile, let's say, to 90% of my capability. Just a quick 1 miler. Again, that's short and painless. But when I do long workouts, it's usually a 5K run. How much bread have you been eating? That's from Anas Alamri. Anas, I do eat bread every day now. Like, I go through phases of what I like to eat. Okay, so before COVID, I was really on raw diet. Okay, I was really doing a lot of raw, but it's very hard to be raw right now during COVID, because when I am raw, I go to the market every day or every second day at the latest. Okay, so I buy produce every day when I'm doing raw food diet. Can't do it during COVID-19. During COVID-19, I go to the market every third day, every fourth day. So I'm keeping processed foods to a minimum, but I do enjoy bread. Now, I got this bread from the market, which is incredible. It's a bread. It comes it's sealed bread, but it's not fully cooked. You got to cook it for 8 minutes in the oven. So you get warm, fresh bread. It comes out of the oven warm and fresh. And for those of you who don't know, I love bread. I'm a bread fanatic. I don't eat bread often. Now I am. I'm eating 380 calories of bread every single day. That's the amount of bread I eat. Okay, so it's the whole loaf. The whole loaf is 380 calories. I eat that. That's my carbs. You know, I eat other carbs. Of course, I do eat a lot of carbs. I'm a carb eater. I know a lot of people out there don't eat carbs. I'm a big carb eater. But I eat carbs responsibly, my friends. I eat carbs responsibly. I eat it within my caloric intake. But of course, I'm always trying to hit my protein. I try to hit 0.8 grams of protein per pound of body weight that I have. So I like to hit, like, at least minimum, the minimum amount of protein, grams of protein I'll take in a day is 100 grams. 100 grams of protein. Now, I've been doing that lately. So I couldn't do that when I was doing raw. Okay, so I'm just saying now during COVID, I'm not doing raw right now. So now I'm doing cooked foods. I can't get to the market every day. I'm eating bread. 380 calories worth of bread. More carbs. I also eat other carbs. But for bread, because for me, I feel like when I eat too much bread, I gain weight. I love bread. Here's the thing. I love fresh baked bread. Like, sometimes I bake my own bread, and it's the greatest meal ever. Bread with, like, steak and potatoes, freshly cooked bread, freshly, out of the oven, like it just came out. That, for me, is like a dream. It's a dream meal. But I can't do that. If I eat too much bread, I gain weight right away. Now, of course, you can get a lot of calories in bread. I try to make the healthier breads. But if I overdo it on the breads, personally, me, my body, boom, I gain weight right away. And not the good kind of weight. So I limit my bread. Does shadow rolling work? That's from Eru. What's shadow rolling? Like, it's kind of like grappling by yourself. It's like, think about shadow boxing, but you're kind of doing your moves by yourself. Solo drills, a lot of you will probably call it solo drills, and you can also use shadow wrestling. I think it's good, but it can only take you so far. Like, I do shadow wrestling. When I'm warming up, I'll shadow wrestle. And after practice, I'll do my solo drills. I do a lot of solo drills. A little bit every day. So after practice, I'll do my solo drill. In my instructional butterfly guard, I did an instructional dynamic butterfly guard. Check it out on jujiclub.com. I show a couple of solo drills for butterfly guard. I believe there are some solo drills that are really, really good. And some that are so-so. Okay, the good ones, when you do them on a daily basis, they really make a huge change in your game. Will I do them for 5 hours on end? No, personally, I wouldn't. I feel like jujitsu and wrestling, you need a partner. You need that exchange. It's not like shadow boxing. Shadow boxing is a lot more effective than shadow grappling. It'll make a greater effect in boxing than shadow grappling will do in jujitsu. It's just the nature of the game. You know, in jujitsu, you have to combine maneuvers and you have to react often to how your opponent is reacting. And there's a lot more feel because you're connected to one another. So I believe it could take you so far, but it ain't gonna replace your training partners. Coach, how do you balance eating and training in Ramadan? That's from Hisham. Hisham, good question. During Ramadan, you're eating after sundown. I eat after sundown, but I only eat between 1,700 calories to 2,600 calories. That's my caloric balance. Okay, so now I measure my foods, I calculate them, and that's it. If I want to lose a little weight, I go towards the 1,700. I never go below 1,700, and I never go higher than 2,600. Depending of how much I trained, how, you know, what am I doing? I'm not training that much. I am still training on during Ramadan, so no water, no food, still training. But my trainings are much more tame, okay? So they're not really, they're kind of just staying in shape, you know? They're doing my best during Ramadan, let's just say. And if I stay within, let's say, 1,900 calories, I won't gain any weight. Actually, I'll lose weight. I'm in the phase of cutting right now. So sometimes I go through a bulking phase, and sometimes I go through a cutting phase. Right now, I'm going through a cutting phase. So what I suggest is go online and get one of those. Find a calorie calculator. You're going to put your age, your gender, how active you are, and it's going to tell you, look, here's how many calories you need to maintain your weight. Here's how much you need to lose weight. And here's a really quick extreme fat loss if you really want to lose weight fast. And this is the amount of calories you should eat. So it'll give you like three numbers. And fluctuate between those three numbers. Okay, obviously, don't stick around at the low end because then you're going to start getting tired. You're going to start getting irritable. Your muscles are going to start feeling sore. You want to be in the mid-range to low range if you're cutting, and you want to be at the higher end if you're maintaining, and a little bit higher if you want to bulk up. Okay, so if I want to bulk up, I'll probably hit like 3,000 calories. Now, after that, you want to aim for your proteins. Okay, you want to make sure you get adequate amount of protein. I recommend 0.5 or 0.8 times your body weight. Okay, times your projected body weight. What's your ideal body weight? Let's say your body weight, your ideal body weight is 100 pounds, then you need 80 grams of protein or 50 grams of protein. I wouldn't go lower than 50, okay? So if you're not training a lot, maybe 50 is fine. If you're training a lot, you need to go to 0.8, in my opinion. That's what I recommend. So hit your proteins. Get the most nutritious foods for the least amount of calories. So there's something called the ANDI score. That's the aggregate nutrition density index. Joel Fuhrman put that together. For those of you I've never heard of Joel Fuhrman. I'm a big fan of Joel Fuhrman. He wrote many books on dieting. Check them out, including The End of Dieting. Check out that book. It's a great book. Basically, what are the foods with the most nutritious value with the least amount of calories? And make sure you pick, you know, if let's say you're going to eat 2,000 calories, make sure you pick some of the top foods, okay, if you want to stay healthy, strong, and you want it to be easy. Now, if you eat 2,000 calories in chocolate bars, you're going to be hungry shortly after, okay? So you need a high amount of density in when it comes to nutrition and a low amount of calories as much as possible. You're trying to, you know, find that cross. Now, you're going to see in an ANDI score, it's mostly greens. You can't get enough calories just greens. So you're going to have to flirt with the lower scored items, you know, like olive oil and breads and all that stuff, okay? But most of your calories, no, I shouldn't say that. You should make sure you get lots of the higher scoring foods on the ANDI score. Make sure you get those, but those won't be enough calories for you for the rest of the day. That's why you can add bread. You can add rice. Like I eat potatoes, I eat bread, I eat rice, but I make sure to always have a good amount of foods that come from the Andy score. And he also recommends a lot of raw foods. Okay, so half your nutrients should come from raw foods. I'm also a big believer in raw foods. I feel very, very good when, I would say at least minimum, 50% of my calories come from raw foods. All right, what else we got here? What's your opinion on keto? That's from Silikonin. Silikonin, look, I don't have, I believe that all diets work. I have this weird belief, okay? I think that all diets work. I don't think that every diet is perfect for everybody. You know, I've read, I'm not a dietitian, I'm not an expert in this, okay? But I've worked with so many experts, and I've got so much contradictory information. I've read so many books on nutrition. I like what Joel Fuhrman says. He says, look, not everything works for everybody. Some people can get away with higher amounts of carbs. Some people cannot. I have a different diet than my dad. He's a diabetic. I have a different diet than my wife. She has other issues, okay? You have to do some research, speak to your doctor, experiment. I've done keto, and I've experimented with it. It's great. I think it's good. I just felt, look, I love keto. I love keto dieting. And let me tell you why I love keto dieting, because I enjoy it. Oh, hold on a second. My phone. Sorry, let me turn that off. I enjoy dieting on the keto diet. I love barbecue. You get to eat a lot more proteins. It goes with my lifestyle. Here's the downside is my performance in the gym goes down. Like, I feel more acidic. I feel more lethargic. And I've tried all the solutions, eating carbs before, carb loading before. I just feel that the carbs, I don't know why, they don't have the same effect. And I've experimented with a variety of different amounts of carbs before practice. So what they say is, okay, be keto. And right before you go do a very intense sport, like wrestling, grappling, or boxing, carb load, have some carbs. You know, a lot of times it's referred to as carb timing. Time your carbs for your workout. I've done it. I've tried it many times. I get lean. I feel good, except when I'm in training. I feel good before training. I feel good after training. When I'm training, I don't feel horrible. I just don't feel as good as when I'm eating carbs throughout the day. Now, maybe it's because the carbs that I ate hours before didn't have the time to digest. I've experimented with limiting my carbs in a variety of ways. Eating my carbs in the morning, working out at night. I've done it. I've done it in so many different ways. I just don't feel good on it. Now, I know athletes who do practice keto and carb timing, and they feel good on it. They claim to feel good on it. So it works for them. It doesn't work for me. For me, in the later rounds of training, I'm not feeling good. I'm feeling more lethargic. I feel my heart rate is higher than usual. I feel like my legs are giving out. I don't do well on low carb. And then a lot of times the low carb experts will say, well, it's because you're not fat adapted. I've tried it for a long time, many times. Believe me, I'm very familiar with the ketogenic diet, low carb diet. I'm very familiar. I was on the bandwagon years ago, 15 years ago. I've been trying it for over 15 years. And when barbecue season comes, sometimes I jump back on and I'm like, hey, you guys, you know what? I'm going to go low carb for a while because I love barbecue. And I'll let my training suffer a little bit. Okay. But if I was fighting, if I was preparing for a fight, because I know a lot of you guys are listening to this, or a grappling competition, or wrestling, or jiu-jitsu, or boxing, or whatever you're going to compete in, if you're going to do any glycogenic sport, in my opinion, follow the Dolce diet. Okay, he gives you carbs, and he gives you carbs throughout the day. I feel that the guys who do that diet, they get shredded. Their performance is good. They're in a glycogenic sport. They got plenty of glycogen. They have everything they need for the fight. And I feel that's the correct way to do it, to be honest with you. Okay. Coach, can you make a home workout video? Where can I buy a Tim Tam in UK? That's from TD. TD, you're going to have to write timtam.com, timtam.tech, write them. Go on the website, go to timtam.tech, contact them, send them a message, ask them how you can get a Tim Tam in UK. I'm not sure myself. How to do a home workout video? Honestly, I haven't had a chance to film anything like that. I think that this kind of content is going to be better. I am planning on shooting another instructional very soon. So in the next 2 weeks, I plan to not release it. I'm planning to set myself up to go in the gym and film in the gym. So while I'm there, I might film you guys something and then put it up. Maybe that's, I think, the next time I'll be able to do a technique video. But till then, I'm not planning on it. I'm planning on just doing podcasts for now. Until the gyms open back up. Okay, so when gyms open back up, I'll be happy to do more technique videos. Coach, when is the gym opening up again? Tyrone, not soon enough. It couldn't be soon enough. Like, I'm really hoping the gym opens up soon. Now, today in Canada, I don't know. I heard you guys in the US are opening up in certain places. Today, my wife, she works for the school board here in Quebec, and she's been working this throughout this whole COVID crisis. Obviously, the school board has been reformulating various strategies on how to get these kids back in school, educate them from home, etc. And my wife's very much a part of that. So she's been working throughout the whole COVID crisis. However, today, the school board is allowed to go back in the building. So my wife's actually working in her office right now, today. Today's the first day. And I'm hoping that that's going to open the door to other businesses opening up. That's what they're saying now. Every day now, the government's having like live briefings, just like in the U.S. I assume the U.S. is doing that as well. And hopefully they're going to start reopening up various businesses, essential businesses first, that you can keep 2 meters away. So that puts TriStar Gym, it puts all gyms on the back burner. Obviously, we can't stay 2 meters away, and obviously, we're not essential. We're not essential to them, guys. They opened up the liquor. They opened up the liquor stores here in Montreal and Quebec, the SAQ, but they don't open up the TriStar Gym. So buying alcohol is essential to them. However, training and fitness is not essential. Now, I understand, obviously, because we're closely knit, grappling. Obviously, if somebody has COVID, it's going to go all over the place. Now, I understand. I'm not trying to say that they should open up gyms. I think we should go step by step, carefully. I think they're very smart about it. I think we have to listen to the doctors, the experts, of course, the disease experts. And they're all saying, look, this thing can get worse. It's not to be taken lightly. And spraying Lysol in, or injecting Lysol in your body is not going to work. It actually would kill you. So we should be very careful when it comes to COVID-19. Now, I have my own personal beliefs, but I'm not going to bring them out to the table because what's the point? I'm not an expert in this. I really think we should defer to the experts and get a difference of a variety of opinions. A multitude of disease experts would be great, and let them hash it out. Let them debate it publicly. Let us make up our opinion based on what they say. And from what I've gathered personally, you know, doing my own research, is that this thing is it's to be taken seriously. So that's what I'm doing. But I can't wait till the gym opens up, and I'm ready to go back to the gym right now. I'm ready to take the risk, to be honest with you. And you know, in Quebec, they reported that 95 or 98% of the people who are actually dying are the elderly. So if I do get back to the gym, I would stay away from the elderly. I'm staying away from my parents and any other elderly person so as to not put them back at risk. Or excuse me, not to put them at risk. So I think we have to be responsible. We have to protect the elderly absolutely 100%, especially those people who are going back out into the world. You should only do so if you're not living with an elderly person. Now, what are the other groups that are in danger? Obese, people who are obese. So my wife got a letter from the school board saying that people with a certain, this body mass index or greater cannot go back to work. I read this letter myself, guys. Okay, so the government is saying, look, you cannot go back to work if your body mass index is superior to this amount. I can't remember the amount right now. And I look at my wife, I'm like, that's going to be a lot of people. She's like, yeah, well, you know, they can't go back to work. Why? Because they associated mortality with obesity. This disease kills the elderly and those who are overweight. So, hey, my wife's back to work. I'm willing to risk her. I'm willing to risk myself now, okay? I'm willing to go back to the gym. I'm really looking forward to go back to the gym and working out and training. And I'm ready to, if I catch the COVID, I'll isolate myself for 2 weeks, recover. I don't think it'll be lethal for my age group. I have, thankfully, thank God, I have no pre-existing conditions. I don't have asthma. I'm not elderly. And so I think that it's a risk that I'm personally willing to take. But of course, I would do everything in my power to keep from catching it and from transmitting it, of course. I work with a nurse here in Montreal. That's like 300 pounds minimum. That's from Tyrone. Tyrone, well, you know, she's just more at risk, but she's needed. All right, what else we got here? Are you blood type A? That's from Tyrone. Tyrone, I don't know what blood type I am, actually. for us, will you do a buddy cop movie with GSP? Venom, if they call me, I'm in. Greetings from Texas. Rowan, greetings, my friend. Greetings to you as well. Coach, is cutting weight like fighters healthy? Anas, no, not on a regular basis. I don't think so. And but you're in, if you're in really, really good shape, I think you can mitigate a lot of the side effects that a normal person would have, cutting that much water. You know, I think a normal person, if they cut as much water as a fighter does, they would faint. They would like, they would just crash. You know, they wouldn't be able to handle it because it's not a comfortable feeling. It's a very uncomfortable feeling. And a lot of these guys have been doing it since they're, you know, really young. They've been competing. So when you do it in an environment where all the other guys are doing it also, you kind of get that encouragement. And you just kind of tough it out more because of social pressure. So doing it on your own, I think, is a really bad idea. Do you train while fasting or at night? That's from Lath. I'll train during fasting period, and then after I eat, that's it. I don't train. Or I'll do a little bit of kettlebell afterwards. So I'll train, I'll do the bag, I'll go for a run, I'll aerodyne, I'll do some solo drills, I'll work up a sweat. Again, this is far more milder of a workout than I'm used to. Obviously, because I'm fasting, not drinking, nothing. And then after I break my fast, I may chill out for a little bit, relax, and then do a little bit of kettlebell or some bodyweight exercise. But sometimes I don't do anything. I just relax and recover. Okay, what else we got here? In what kind of way do you think a psychologist would work with high-level MMA fighters? That's from Hoo-Hoo-Ho-Ho. I think psychologists can help with managing stress. You know, when you're fighting on the big show, there's a lot of stress, a lot of mental pressure. I think they help you alleviate that. But I don't think a psychologist is going to make you good. I think that's where people, you know, run into error. They think, hey, I'm going to be so mentally strong that nobody could beat me. My mind is going to be so, you know, well developed. I'm going to do so much mental training that when I fight, if I have it here, I'm going to somehow magically know the right techniques and the right situations and the right, I'm going to have the right reactions. That's, in my opinion, totally false, okay? I think that if you build this level of skill, let me make this point a little more clear. If I have this much skill, but my mental strength is here, on fight night, I may, not for sure, I may fall to here. Okay. Now, if my skill level is here, I've trained, by skill level, I mean you've practiced your reaction time, you've learned all the positions, you've learned the counter punches, you've learned how to kick, you've drilled it till it's smooth, till it's instinctive, like you've practiced a lot. You understand the nuances of punching and kicking, sprawling, choking. Okay. Then your mental, your confidence or your mental ability is here. Then you'll perform at this level. You will perform to your true potential. However, if you're mentally unprepared, if when you go out into the lights, you know, you're hearing the people and you're distracted by the commentator and you're looking around and you feel uncomfortable, you're down here, your skill level might drop. Okay, why? Because you're distracted. You're having this overload of sensory experience. Your thoughts are elsewhere. Your brain is preoccupied digesting all this new information, all this other noise, and you're not focused. Okay, so guys, when they have great performances, usually it will be like, they didn't notice the lights. They didn't notice Bruce Buffer. They didn't notice the ring card girl. They didn't hear the fans. Like, they didn't, it was just them and the other guy. That's it. They blanked everything out. Sometimes they call it the zone, you know, like they were alone by themselves with the game ball or alone by themselves with just their opponent ahead. Like, everything else is gone. Their focus is 100% on the task at hand. And I think that's the ultimate goal. So if a psychologist can help you get there, great. If he cannot help you focus, then I think his all that mental training is pretty much useless. Tony, double interim champ. That's from Tyrone. Again, Tyrone, you're on fire, man. I don't know why. My eyes just kind of lock on your comments. Yes, he would be the double interim champ. Now, don't forget, he was stripped of his interim title. He never lost the title. He never got to fight Khabib, and then there was one champion. This never happened. Now they've been booked 5 times. First time, it was Tony or Khabib that dropped out. I can't remember. Second time, again, Tony or Khabib. It was 2 times. So 2 times Tony dropped out, 2 times Khabib dropped out. Now it's the 5th time they were booked. And I think God just doesn't want this fight to happen. And COVID-19 was released upon the world, so this fight cannot happen. This fight has been booked 5 times, and we all wanted to see this fight every single time it was booked. But this fight is destined not to happen. This fight was just destined. The things that have occurred for Khabib and Tony not to be able to fight, nobody could plan this. This is just incredible. I was so looking forward to this fight. I thought this fight was going to happen this time, most certainly. And it didn't. COVID-19, the apocalypse happened. The apocalypse had to happen to cancel this fight again for the 5th time and maybe the final time. I don't know if these guys will ever be booked again. Could the UFC book the same 2 guys 6 times? Can it happen? Would another pandemic occur? Will the dinosaurs reappear? What's going to stop the 6th matchup between Tony Ferguson and Khabib? I don't know. I don't think we should do it. I don't think we should even tempt trying it a 6th time. Let them both just have a belt each. I'm willing to concede this. I don't want any horrible pandemic to happen again. Firas, do you speak Arabic? Bala bahki Arabi. Yes, I do speak Arabic. 6th time will end in a nuclear war. That's from Pan. Pan, maybe so. It may very well be so. It just seems like it's not going to happen. I'm 6 feet tall. How heavy can I get with 10% body fat? That's from John K. I'm not sure, actually. You'd have to do some research on that. Not sure. I heard that athletes are susceptible to infectious illness. That's from Jamal. Jamal, I'm still willing to take the risk, to be honest with you. You know, I got to open up this gym again, you know, as soon as it's legal. I'm willing to train, and if I get sick, you know, I was telling one of my fighters, he's from Africa, and he was like, coach. he's a good kid. I love this kid. His name is Mike. Really good kid. Good fighter. Gonna be in UFC. You guys are going to hear his name one day. Very good fighter. Lots of fights. Lots of amateur fights. Going to be pro soon. He walks up to me, coach, are you worried about COVID-19? Like, he was like, he seemed worried about COVID. Like, this is right before the shutdown. You know, should we be training? Should we not be training? I'm like, Mike, you're from Africa. This to you is baby. The Africans call this thing baby Ebola. Like, I don't want to make light of it, okay? But I was in the gym here. Gym talk, guys. Gym talk warning, okay? Gym talk disclaimer. I was like, this is baby Ebola, okay? This is the sniffles. If you get sick in your age group, nobody's dying. You just get sick. You're sick for 2 weeks. You have the flu symptoms. You know, like, don't worry about it too much. You know, like, do your best not to get it. Guys, I'm not trying to be cavalier here. Do your best not to get it. Stay 2 meters away. Wash. Don't, you know, wear a mask not to transmit your germs to anyone else. Do it all. I do it all, guys. I do it all. I promise you. But if you get sick, there's less than 1% chance in our age group, his age group at the time, significantly less than 1% chance that he's going to die. At least that's my understanding. That's the research that I've done. He'll just be sick. He'll get over it. The real threat is the elderly. Is this thing can go widespread and kill the elderly and people who are obese now. They're coming out with new information. And of course, at that time, so many things were unknown. They're like, hey, what if this thing goes out of hand? And we didn't know that, you know, these certain aspects of this disease. And now we're in hot water. So I understand why they were being prudent. They did the smart thing. They've been prudent. They've been careful. They did what's best to save human lives. I'm all for it. But again, it was gym talk, and I was like, dude, this is baby Ebola to you. This is not even Ebola. This is the sniffles for you guys. This is, you're young. You're in shape. If you get it, you will survive. That's my opinion. Again, not medical advice. Do your own research. Talk to your doctor. But at the end, I'm not really worried about catching COVID, guys. I'll be honest with you. I'm ready. If it was legal to go to the gym right now, today, I would open my doors, and I'll tell people, look, come in here, train at your own risk. I would have every protocol I can imagine to make the gym safe, but I would definitely train if I could. I would roll, I would train, and I would tell guys, look, if you're a little bit sick in any way, if you cough in the gym, you have to leave. I would make it strict. But for those who are healthy and are willing to take the risk, I would do it. Okay, this is from Malik. This is a super chat. For us, I'm 18. I want to be a full-time MMA fighter and drop out of university to pursue MMA. My family, they say, is a very bad idea and it won't work. But I believe in myself and I know that that's what I want to do. That's from Malik. Okay, Malik. Malik, your family doesn't want you to fight and you want to fight. You want to drop out of school to fight. Here's what I would say. Let's be fair. I don't know what your current level of experience is. You're 18. Go into an MMA gym. Train, spar, talk to the coach. Tell him you want to do an amateur fight. Make a deal with your parents. Say, look, if I fight 5 amateur fights, let's reassess after that. Because after 5 fights, you'll know whether this is for you, whether you have the talent, whether you have the potential, I should say, to actually make it. Because I'll tell you something, many people have tried and many people are starving. Many MMA fighters retire and, you know, they're working difficult jobs. Maybe the wiser path is to go to university. Maybe it's not. I don't know. So what I would do, I would make a deal with my parents. I would commit to doing 5 fights. You don't have to drop out of school to do 5 fights. Train and go to school. I did it. Okay. And I had a lot more than 5 fights. Do amateur fighting first. Amateur grappling, amateur wrestling, amateur boxing, or amateur MMA. Whatever is available to you. They're all good. Do 5 of them at least. And then reassess. And who knows, maybe you get a degree and you go to school, and you fight until you're ready to go pro and you see the money on the table and you say, hey, you know what? I can make it. But in my opinion, try to do 5 fights at least first. I'm in Mississauga and think of training MMA after COVID as a beginner. Should I train at Elite MMA or UFC gym good enough for me? That's from Alex Chu. Alex Chu, go to a MMA gym. In my opinion, go to an MMA gym. The UFC gyms are going to be more commercial. You know, they're going to be more from mom and pop. So you're not going to really get a taste of it, okay? Go to a jiu-jitsu club. Go to a wrestling club. Go to a boxing club. Go to a kickboxing club. A real one. And get your feet wet. Like, get in there. And definitely, I recommend martial arts. You won't regret it. How to get rid of loose skin after fat loss? That's from Ankur. Ankur, I recommend you go see if you lost a lot of weight, which I had one of my students once, he lost about 100 pounds. And he went to see a plastic surgeon, and the plastic surgeon, look, he did an operation on him, and it made a huge difference. Because after losing that 100 pounds, and he lost it fast, he lost it within a year. It was about a year. Now, don't forget, when somebody loses 100 pounds, because they were really out of shape. Like, this guy was really out of shape. And he came to TriStar Gym, and he was really motivated. And we got him in really, really good shape. We got him ripped, abs. Like, the guy was just, he wasn't doing MMA. He was doing a little bit of MMA, but he was more about the fitness. He changed his diet. He changed his whole life. Did a 180. And he had a lot of loose skin. And he went to see a plastic surgeon. So that's what I recommend. And see whether they tell you that, hey, it'll tighten up on its own, which I don't think it will. Or maybe you need a surgery. Okay, guys, I hear one of my children coming down the steps. Hopefully we don't get interrupted, but we may. Like I said, that's the reason why I haven't been doing my podcast. I have the kids at home here. I have a 5-year-old daughter, so she's a bit out of control. My sons, you know, they're not a problem. It's just my daughter a little bit. So I have to be constantly watching her and taking care of her. And that's why I snuck away today to take care of this podcast. And hopefully I'll do another one for Cruz versus Henry Cejudo. All right, here we go. What do we got here? Coach, what do you think about having a great memory will help shorten the learning curve of MMA? That's from Al Hassan. Well, here's the problem is to have a great memory. Are you talking about training your memory? Because I do a lot of that. I'm a big memory brain athlete, as they call them. If you're talking about like studying mnemonics and all that, it takes time to study mnemonics. It takes time to get good at mnemonics. So I believe it takes 10 years to become a real expert in mnemonics, to be a real, like, one of the elite guys in the world. And for me, I found it worth it. I do it. But I don't think you have to be a mnemonics expert. If you're talking about memory, because I've talked about memory in the past on the show, I don't think you need that. That's not why I do it, okay? That's one reason. I do love having a strong memory. However, it's not why I did it. I don't think you have to be a memory expert and then you're going to learn BJJ so much faster. No, getting on the mat, drilling, studying the art, you have plenty of memory for that, okay? You have plenty of memory. However, it does help. But you'll never be a true memory expert if you're, you know, I love the book The One Thing by Michael Gelleher. He says, look, if you chase two ra there's an old Russian saying, if you chase two rabbits, you get none. You know, you got to focus. Are you going to be a jiu-jitsu expert? Okay. Well, if your life is to be a jiu-jitsu, if your expertise is jiu-jitsu, you cannot be a mnemonics expert. You can't go deep in mnemonics. Like I train in mnemonics, and I wouldn't say I'm great. I would say I'm good. I'm not great. I would have to study day and night to be great. Now, if I study at this pace after 10 years, I'll be really good, but I still won't be one of the top in the world. So, if you're gonna do fitness, if you're gonna do CrossFit, if you're gonna be a run, if you're gonna run, if you're gonna do bike, but you want to be a jiu-jitsu expert, all that stuff's got to take a back seat to jiu-jitsu is what I'm trying to say. Now, regardless if it's mnemonics or whatever, okay? Maybe you have another hobby. I don't know. Maybe you love, I don't know, maybe you love hunting. Well, you know what? You're gonna have to do a little bit of hunting. You can't do too much hunting. If you become an expert in hunting, you're gonna lose some of your jiu-jitsu, okay? So jiu-jitsu is always first. You do it all day long. You study jiu-jitsu, you wrestle, you go over techniques, you do your solo drills, you do everything that needs to be done for jiu-jitsu, and then you could do your CrossFit, and then you could do your bike, and then you could do your swimming, your laps, and then you could do your fitness. That has to be always a supporting role. It never takes the center stage. The center stage is always the jiu-jitsu itself, if that's your goal. So my question is to you is, what is your goal? Now, suppose here's another way you can get around it. Suppose at the age of 5, you were trained in mnemonics till the age of 15, and then at 15 you took up jiu-jitsu. Then I would say yes, you could be an expert in mnemonics because you learned it at such a young age. That's why they teach us our ABCs at a young age. They don't wait till you're 20 to teach you how to read and write. They teach it to you when you're young. Why? Because when you're young, you learn at a much faster rate. And you learn it in a way that's far more embedded in your psyche than anything else. Okay, so that's why all cultures teach how to read and write on day, well, not on day one, okay, but at a very young age. At year one, they start teaching you A, B, C, D. You know, at year, the first few words you could say, they start showing you pictures of things that start with the letter A. And lo and behold, a few years later, you can read. Okay, so if you did mnemonics at a very young age, as you get older, you don't need to train mnemonics anymore. You're already an expert in mnemonics. Okay, then that would be a very special circumstance because then I would believe that that particular person would learn jiu-jitsu at a much faster rate. Yes, absolutely. Who do you think wins between Khabib and Damian Maya? That's from Sunny Bear. I would pick Khabib now today. I don't think Damian Maya is at his peak right now, so I think Khabib has more power striking. He's faster. He's just better with the striking. I think he would keep it striking and he would win in that manner. Okay. All right. What else we got here? Not understanding this question. What do you think about Stipe Miocic's skills? Is it like he has invisible MMA, like invisible BJJ? Bruno, that's from Bruno. Bruno, I'm not sure you know what it means, what invisible BJJ means. Excuse me. Or actually, maybe you do. For those of you who are not aware with that term, like invisible BJJ is like, you know, such little details that, let's say you do armbar, you have two people doing armbar, one guy who's a blue belt, one guy who's a black belt. The black belt and the blue belt are actually doing very different things, but to a layman, it'll seem the same. And that thing that you don't see, that's what we call invisible jiu-jitsu. Those little details. It could be just shifting your weight. It could be just a variation of the grip. It could just be at the angle of which you place your foot, which makes the entire difference in the move. Yes, I think Stipe does I like to refer to it as nuances. Hard to teach things that you can express, but they're difficult to express. But you figure them out usually by somebody teaching you the fundamentals, and you did the fundamentals so much that eventually you figured out nuances that nobody ever taught you. And sometimes you can learn a nuance that is very, very key to making a move more powerful. So if somebody shows you a really cool detail, you've been doing this move for many years. It's happened to me many times. So let's say you've been doing omoplata for many years, and then somebody shows you a detail you've never seen before, and it's like, makes such a massive difference, and it's so subtle but makes a huge difference. That's what we refer to often as a nuance or invisible jutsu. Of course, Stipe, you know, he reached the highest level. He's arguably the greatest heavyweight of all time. So he all these fighters do that. All of them have some level of invisible jiu-jitsu, as you put it. Derek Lewis is the best at invisible BJJ. Venom Musk. No, I see what you're saying. But no, he's kind of a little bit the opposite. What else we got here? When did you learn Arabic, coach? That's from Azar. Azar, I grew up speaking Arabic. My parents speak Arabic. Okay, hold on, guys. I got to adjust something here. Hold on 1 minute. Give me 1 moment. Okay, guys, I'm back. Pardon me, I had a little technical difficulty here with the table. I had to adjust my table here. It was knocking into my legs, shaking the camera. I am back. All right, the table is now a little higher. I won't be knocking it around by moving my legs. All right, what else we got here? Let's see. Kamaru Usman versus Douglas Lima. Who would you pick? That's from Alexi. That would be a very interesting fight, actually. I think Usman will get the fight to the ground. But Douglas could tear up Usman's leg. He's got the most vicious leg kicks I've ever seen, to be honest. And I think those leg kicks, though, he can get double-legged. When he throws that leg kick, which will be vicious, it will be painful, but he'll be falling right into a double leg. Because when somebody double kicks you to the leg, it makes it easier actually to double leg them. So you have the guy with a really great double leg, and you have a guy who's going to low kick. What you're going to get is you're going to get a guy who low kicks into a double leg. And I think Usman is just too much on top. He's gonna outwork him on top. So ultimately, I'll pick Usman. Coach, can I grapple just for fun? That's Emery, of course, and you don't need my permission, believe it or not. Many people all over the world do it. Grappling is definitely fun. What's your favorite style of type of philosophy? That's from Hoo Hoo Ho Ho. Well, you know what? I studied the Greeks. Many years now I've studied the Muslim philosophers, and many years I've studied the Enlightenment philosophers, or mostly British empiricism. And the reason why I studied those three categories is because those are the ones that interested me the most. Now, I've read up on a variety of philosophy. Stoicism, like you mentioned. And Stoicism is, I would say, Marcus Aurelius in particular. Yeah, it was very interesting to me. However, I wouldn't say it's my favorite. I think it has a very special place in philosophy, but it was not my favorite. My favorite, by far, would have to be the three categories that I mentioned. I think they're most fascinating. And when you gel them all together, I think you have an incredible philosophy. Super chats. Okay, I missed some super chats. Let me double check here. I'm going to get to it real quick. All right. Your opinion on Pavel's simple and sinister. I think it's good. But you don't want to be too simple, okay? I think it's good. It's a good starting point. But I'd want to branch off later on. Okay, I think that's pretty much it. Do you believe in authentic hadiths? Well, this is a theology question. And you know what? I will answer for you. That's from Mo MMA. Mo, you know what? There's a science to hadith. I'm not a master of hadith. And I've studied a lot of Imam Ghazali for many years. And he was not a master of hadith. That was one of the criticisms towards him. He was a master of Quran. He was a master of many texts. Master of reason, logic, philosophy, but not a master of hadith. Hadiths are open to criticism. Okay, hadiths are open to criticism. This is what scholars say, not my opinion, scholarly opinion. And I let the scholars, you know, duke it out. That's up to them. But again, anything that goes against the Quran should be rejected, in my opinion. And a lot of them do. And sometimes social norms or politics play a role in why they choose a hadith over a Quranic verse that is clearly the complete opposite. So in my opinion, it's always Quran first. Hadith are open to criticism, but I like to listen to the scholars. Let them decide. Let them dig it up. Let them do their best and figure out what's authentic and what is not. But that's a science altogether. I mean, that is some people spend their entire lives trying to figure that out, put that puzzle together. Okay, what else we got here? Dude, check out Denahar's solo drills. That's from Marco Castro. I haven't seen his solo drills, but you know what? I haven't seen his video on it, but I've seen him solo drill before my eyes many times. He actually warms up when we train. He actually warms up quite often with solo drills. I'm talking about, you know, back in the day. He always did solo drills before practice. And sometimes he would teach them to us. And I've always kept them up. I've always did them. I usually do them after practice because I'm teaching now. So I'll teach guys. Sometimes I make my students do the solo drills. Okay, so not all the time. Not every class. Don't get me wrong. I think you should do your technique. You should wrestle and then add solo drills before or after, like to warm up or to cool down. But don't make the whole workout. Don't make the workout the solo drills. I don't think it'll take you that far. I think it's a good complementary exercise. Please talk about the cruise fight. That's from Dip. I'm going to do that in a separate video, I believe. Coach, do you do any specific breathing technique? I got the Wim Hof system, and I think it's really good. I only really do one of the exercises, and it has a place in my routine, and I really enjoy it. I think it is good. It is very, very good. All right, somebody's getting kicked out. Coach, what's your main rabbit, university or training? Hung Ryu, at one point it was university, but now it's definitely training. Okay, so I would say, look, you know what? When I went to university, it was back and forth, and I know that's not good. I had to go to university. I had no choice. You know, I had to do it. So it was a very stressful time in my life. I would wake up in the morning, I would train, I would go to university, come back and train, and wake up the next day and do it over and over again. But when I was in university, when I have breaks between classes, I would study, I would do my papers, like I would get it all done. It was a very stressful time in my life. But I was also training a lot of fighters. I then took a reduced course. I was not going to university full time. It took me a long time to finish university. At one point, I was only doing two courses. And I'll be honest with you, a lot of the courses I took them strategically because I had already covered this material personally. Like I've one thing that was always strong at was reading or audiobooks. A tremendous amount of reading and audiobook, a tremendous amount. So when I went to class, I had already read the material or I could read the material quite quickly because I'm really good at, if you give me a book and you tell me, hey, draw out its key ideas, I was really good at taking that book and dissecting it. And I have a particular way of doing it. So when I read a book, for instance, when I read a book, I don't read every single line. I may, but what I'll do is I'll skip. There's many speed reading techniques. You should familiarize yourself with them. They're quite easy. I would read the first line of a paragraph and the last line of a paragraph and see if I want to read. That would tell me if I want to read the whole paragraph. And I would do certain things like that. And I would get cliff notes and I would do whatever it takes. And a lot of times I had already read the classics. I was very familiar with them. And I had very good studying techniques. I had incredibly good studying techniques. One thing I would do, is back in the day we had tape recorders. I know you guys don't have tape recorders anymore, but you could use your phone. I would record my lesson. So if I was in class, I would record the instructor. I would record the classroom, what he's everything the teacher said. If I did notes, I would read my notes in the cassette. I would read it and I would play every time I drive or I commute to the school. I would have my headphones on. I would listen to the lesson all day long. So I would rarely ever sit in my room to just study. I couldn't. In the morning I had practice, at night I had practice. It was during the day. I would either be in a lecture or I'd be studying. During the day, it was all happening in the day. Once I left university to go to the gym, that's it. I'm not studying. I'm not cracking up, open a book, unless finals or midterms. Then I would put a pause on MMA, and I would really focus on my midterms. Sometimes I would have an essay to write, so I would miss 2 or 3 days of practice just doing my essay, because you know it's not easy to write an essay in university. You know, so it's not always easy. Let's just say, especially in philosophy, because you know. You're going to be scrutinized. And if you make any errors, it's disastrous. So I was very well organized. I was very efficient. And till this day, if I want to learn anything, I just listen to it over and over again. Of course, I also use mnemonics. But if you want to memorize anything, you record it and listen to it all day long. You will remember it. I used to also carry my note. Like if I had a test, I would carry the notes in my pocket. I would open up the paper throughout the day, reread it. Like I have very good studying habits, very, very good studying habits that I got from a program many, many years ago. There was an infomercial many, many years ago. It was called Where There's a Will, There's an A. It's like an old school infomercial where this guy was just saying, like, I'm going to show you all these crazy study techniques. And my father got it for us. You know, I was very young. He was getting it from my older brothers. But I also watched the videos and I also learned all these great learning techniques, all these amazing, really, it was a very intelligent program, and I used them, but they were very simple. They're basically, look, don't sit down and study for 1 hour. That's not gonna happen. You have to refresh your memory over and over again. You have to repeat it over and over again, and you have to do it in the most convenient ways. And after a while, it just sticks in your mind. Okay, guys, we are 1 hour and 20 minutes in. And I'm going to do 1 or 2 more, and that is going to be the end of it all. It's called AMA, Ask Me Anything. Okay, yeah, go ahead, ask me anything. Coach, make sure you don't mention COVID in your next video because I think you get demonetized. Really? Will they demonetize me because I mentioned it? Not sure. I hope not. I don't know why we wouldn't be allowed to mention it, but if they demonetize me, let them demonetize me. What can I do? Thank you for your passion in martial arts. Thanks for the heads up, by the way. I really appreciate it. This one's from 2M. 2M. Thank you for your passion in martial arts and also philosophy. I would like to hear you talk philosophy more in the future. Well, my friend, ask me philosophical questions and I will give you a philosophical answer. We didn't really get any today, so I'm going to let it be. Normally, what I like to do is I like to do the fighting first, and then the fight fans, if they want to stay on, they can stay on. And the philosophy fans or other stuff, they ask me anything craziness that goes in every which way, every direction, which I find does help this podcast remain interesting. So, that's why I do it, but I organize it in a way that we do the fighting first, and after that, it's no holds barred. So with that said, ladies and gentlemen, let's do one last question. One last. Somebody's telling me I have a super chat. No, that was it. I did it. Oh, Mo, that's a heavy-duty question. And you're asking me, thoughts on Rumi and Shams. What do mystics refer to when talking about secrets of the Quran? Do you believe in the miracle the mystics claim? Well, my friend, that is a very profound question. Listen, I've read the text, the mystical text. I'm very familiar with what you're talking about. Now, for those who don't know, Rumi and Shams are two very famous mystics. Now, mysticism is prehistoric. Like, we have mystics throughout the entire all ages, and yes, they are correct. In my opinion, you have higher levels of scrutiny, and mysticism is the highest level of scrutiny. It's like more critical than philosophy. In philosophy, you know, what's annoying is that you have to question everything. Nothing is true until it's proven. It has to be proven logically, not scientifically. Logically, even scientifically is not enough. Biologically, I mean like in a mathematical sense, okay? For those of you not familiar with analytical knowledge, it has to be done in a mathematical sense. It has to be perfect. If you question everything to a high degree and you keep pushing it and you never accept any presupposition. So for instance, a presupposition would be that if I were to say that gentleman over there broke that window. And you'd be like, how do you know that gentleman broke that window? Well, I saw him. Well, you're presupposing that your eyes didn't witness an illusion. Like, okay, well, I have to prove that, right? I have to prove that my eyes are working perfectly and there was no illusion. Now, 99% of people would be like, no, you saw the guy. You have a history of good eyesight. It's enough for us. We don't need to prove that. It's beyond a reasonable doubt. Like, we trust your eyes. That's the guy who broke the window. Cuff him. Give him a fine, whatever it may be. In philosophy, we accept that, but not when we're alone. When philosophers are alone together, we don't accept it. We're like, you know what? Let's take away every presupposition. Now, I give you a very ridiculous one, okay? But believe me, it goes even worse than that. Philosophers will ask you to remove every single presupposition to the point where there's only a few handful of philosophers left to go on. Most of them were like, hey, this is getting way too ridiculous. But some men keep going and keep going and keep going till the point where you realize that the world is nothing but information. The world is information. It's totally different. When you push logic that far, reason that far, when you eliminate all presuppositions, then eventually you do lead to a mystical experience of oneness, etc. But this is far too deep of a topic for this forum or this platform or this brief discussion. But if you ask me what mysticism is, this is what it is. At one point, they will push the envelope so far that they realize that the world is nothing but information. And actually, there is only one piece of information. There's only actually one. You can't even call it a piece of information. That is the totality of evidence that cannot be questioned, that is not based on any presupposition. And we'd have to start from there. So we worked our way backwards and we got there. And that is the starting point. This is what mysticism is. Very difficult to explain. Very difficult to wrap your heads around it if you have no such experience. But this gentleman, Mo, this is exactly what he's asking me. And I felt compelled to ask him because I'm very familiar with the topic. All right, we have another super chat. I was about to end it on there, but somebody spent $9.99 to send out this question, so I will have to do it. Would life truly be more beautiful if we all set aside our ego? Is ego a useful tool or is it an illusion purposed by people not creative enough to find another way? Should we embrace ego? Wow, that's a very deep question. Well, my friend, here's what I would tell you. I think there's a balance you have to have. Okay, so when it comes to your relationship with other human beings, I think you don't want to be a doormat, because some people claim to be so humble, but really they're just doormats. People step all over them. And you don't want to be so brash that you're seen as arrogant and therefore you repulse your peers. People don't like arrogant people, right? Because they're selfish. They take more than their fair share. There's not a connection between us and that arrogant person. So if we're in a room with a very arrogant person, that person is totally disconnected. That person has made it about him or her. And us as a group, we're going to feel very disconnected. So if you want to connect with your fellow human beings, to create that connection, you got to have a balance of ego. because the relationship doesn't work the other way. If we're friends, but I'm only friends with you because you serve my every need and you're my doormat and I step all over you, well, that's not real a real relationship. It's a relationship of convenience. Interdependence is greater. We're friends because we want to be friends, and there needs to be a balance between being egotistical and being a doormat. Okay. Now, when it comes to what my other friend was saying, Shams, was referring to Rumi and Shams. Now we're talking about God. When it comes to God, okay, you should have no ego for obvious reasons because you can't compare. So when it comes to that relationship, you should have zero ego. When it comes to your peers, you should have a level of honor and humility, a good balance. And then you can have a meaningful connection with your friends and family. And really, isn't that what life is best? When you have people around you that you love and love you back? Not people who are around you because you're rich and famous. I think the human connection is really the ultimate experience when it comes to social experiences. Okay, so it doesn't matter what place you're in, what event you're at, what restaurant you're in. It's the connection with the group that you're there with. So which spot did you vacation with? Well, it matters more who I was with and what kind of connection I have with those people that I was with. That's what's going to dictate whether we have a good time. The environment is secondary. It's important, but it's more secondary. You can go to the most beautiful place, but if you're with your wife and your cousins and your brother and your friends and you don't get along and you guys have a horrible connection, you're going to have a horrible time. It's the same thing in the gym. You know, in the gym, I only want people there that are like-minded, that are friendly, respectable. And we can have this great training experience. We can have this great training environment. And it leads to an optimal experience in the gym. It's not just what's being taught. It's how we interact with one another. And respect is huge. You need to have a balance of respect. I should say honor. Don't be a doormat. But also, don't be an egotistical maniac. Don't make it all about yourself. Guys, with that said, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. That was the last question. It was fun for me. I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you did, leave a like. If you didn't, give me a thumbs down and make suggestions for future episodes in the comments. I love to hear it and it'll help me out. See you all in the next episode. Thank you.